Welcome to Making the Difference, a series of programmes from Mary Immaculate College about students and staff, past and present, who have made a difference in some way to the world today. Each episode acts as recognition to a different person for the great and often unrewarded work that they do in their day-to-day lives. Let's hear from today's candidate, Cathy Swift.
I've been asked to say where I'm from, but that's a wee bit complicated. My dad worked in the Irish Department of Foreign Affairs, so I was born in New York, and then I was brought up in Canada and Belgium and a little bit in Ireland, and then came back to boarding school. My folks were living in Belgium at that stage. And then when I graduated in 85, there was no money in Ireland, and I went to England for 10 years. So all my life I've been moving, essentially. So sometimes when people ask me where I'm from, I say Carlow, because I lived for 5 years in Carlow, and up until the time I came to Limerick, that was the longest I'd lived anywhere. But essentially I've wandered a lot. What tends to happen with diplomats' kids is that they either become incredibly international and they sort of belong somewhere floating over the mid-Atlantic and they don't really know where they belong. And some, you know, my brother, for example, is a wee bit like that. Or else you go absolutely the opposite extreme and you dream about retiring to Tory Island and looking after sheep. You know, people tend to react to it in different ways. I did archaeology and history in UCD, and as I say, at that stage there was very little money in Ireland, and most of my class, there was about 300 of us, did history, and all but three of us, I think, left Ireland. And so I went to England, and I was lucky. I got a scholarship to Durham, which at that stage was just coming out of the miners' strike. In many ways, it was even poorer than in Ireland. So I was there for 2 years, and then I worked in the archaeology unit in the Lake District for a year, and then I got a scholarship to Oxford, and I was there for 3 years, and then I went to Germany for a year, and then I came back. And at this stage, jobs were starting in the universities again, but they were short-term jobs. So I had a short-term job in UCD, and then another one in Maynooth, and then another one in Galway, and then a short period in Liverpool. And eventually, out of the blue, when I was unemployed and thinking, God, what am I going to do now with my life, the job in Mary Eye came up. So I'm here. One of the things that makes it fascinating is before, I've always worked in areas where my employers were always convinced that Irish heritage was interesting, as it were. And I was talking to enthusiasts about what I did. Whereas now here, it's much more a case of, well, why would you study Irish heritage? And you have to work out a philosophy of why you think it's important. And I do really do think it's important, but you're much more conscious here that it's of the whole role of, you know, what do we teach in schools? How are we shaping people as they grow into adulthood? What do we decide that at 7 and 8 and 9 people should know about their own country? And that makes it really fascinating. I mean, one of the things, because I've become so conscious of this, and my stuff, at the moment, the kind of material I cover isn't well covered in the university sector. It's not fashionable in the way, but it's still very important for the primary school sector. And you become more and more conscious that, on the one hand, that people who are going out into schools need and are interested in questions like round towers and what function did they have and so forth, but also that you know, because we're living in a world where the internet is becoming so important, and that's becoming the main research tool for everybody, that's encouraging us in a way to rely on material and cultural information which is produced by the big countries, like the the United Kingdom or the States. And it becomes harder and harder to be Irish in that context. I mean, when you're going abroad, when somebody says to you, you're Irish, and you have to define what makes you Irish, it's becoming harder, isn't it? It's very difficult to classify, but for a lot of people outside Ireland, part of what makes Ireland Ireland is the history and the heritage. And you have this really weird thing where people outside Ireland and tourists coming to Ireland, they put such a lot of emphasis on, you know, how we evolved and what our history has been. But people, particularly during the boom and stuff, people here were saying, no, we're not particularly interested in our heritage and it's really only functional for tourism, but it's not something which is important in our lives. And yet when you talk to people, particularly if you go to a particular locality and you're looking at a monument in a particular landscape, everybody is so interested and you know, they'll tell you stories about what they know about it and they want to know what you know about it I think we have to fight as a small country in order to keep our own identity. We're going to have to actively fight to create a sense of self-identity. And God knows, we can have great evenings in the pub, but I'd hate to think that would be our only self-identity.
Do you find, surprising when you talk to the younger people in college, that a lot of people do have a lot of culture about them in regards to Irish music and all the Gaelic sports, obviously, and everything that we play?
I don't find it surprising, but I find it really impressive. One of the things that I find so impressive about it is that for a lot of people, it's not something that they expect credit for. In a way, it's something that they enjoy doing, and they do it because they enjoy doing it. And you know, I've been to, well, the contrast I would draw, I've been to things run by the World Academy of Dance, for example, in UL, and I've been to concerts here, and I preferred the concerts here because in UL it was very mannered and sort of performance orientated, whereas here it was much more spontaneous and again, that's something that if we can keep that spontaneity, that is absolutely crucial to our self-identity, it seems to me. And that if it becomes a river dance type scenario where people are only doing it in front of large audiences, then it becomes quite shamrocky and fake, for me anyway, I think. I am an archaeologist, but because I was unemployed for a while, I went back and I did Old Irish. And for me, perhaps the most important thing is that at a period when very little was written down in Europe, after the fall of the Roman Empire, and there was... really, there was only literature produced by the Roman world and its successor, the Christian world, and it was all written in Latin, and it was very much driven by a dominant ideology of Christianity. In Ireland, there was in addition to that, that tradition was also there, but there was also the tradition of the poets, and they were writing this amazing literature in their native tongue. And I'm using literature in the broadest sense, because in addition to writing stories and sagas and myths, there's also writing law codes, they're writing wisdom literature, they're writing poetry, they're writing genealogies, a huge variety of different types of texts. And particularly the law codes, in a way, the Brehon law codes, are so fascinating, because they're written about and by a people for themselves in a completely different tradition. And it's an insight into Northwestern Europe, a society in Northwestern Europe, from which is has a much lesser degree of Christian overlay, as it were, than the literature that's written in Latin. And that's unique. Nobody else in Europe has this. And I mean, if you compare it to what happens in England, there's Anglo-Saxon Old English law codes, and there's about, they would cover maybe 20 pages of A4. If you look at the Irish law codes from the same period, they cover 2,500 pages. So it's just an incredible wealth in comparison to anywhere else. And one of my crusades in life, as it were, is to try and promote knowledge of that literature, because an awful lot of those law codes haven't even been translated, because people tend to put their emphasis on learning modern Irish, but old Irish is different. It's like the relationship between Latin and French, and it is such an amazingly complex, wonderful world that's described in those. I mean, the law codes tell you how to measure a ham with your fist, how to make beer. If you make beer you have to make beer for your lord, it's part of your rent, and he has the right to send his steward around. And if you're making it in the pig house, where the malt could get dirty, and that would give the lord a stomach ache. So there's descriptions of the fines that if you're not making the beer in the proper fashion, what the lord can do to you. So it's all, it's a really detailed description of our early Irish society, and that I would love to feel that I was adding to knowledge on that subject. And it's relevant now at the moment. There's discussions about, systems of education and how you do it. But one of the things that make Ireland so fascinating in that period is they had two systems of education, and the two systems conflicted with one another. And it was in the spark of the conflict that there was so much originality. That any system, if it's a monosystem and there's no other choice, tends to reduce the amount of discussion. But if you have two completely different ideologies sort of always coming up, everybody has to work out their own accommodation to that. And it's in that working it out that you get huge ideas. But I teach second year electives, which are basically the continuation of the first year modules. And I mean, I'd be good friends with Billy, and I know a lot about, in fact, one of the things we have is that we disagree about certain interpretations and so forth. So people in first year get one interpretation, and then they come into me and they get a second. And that's, I mean, the idea is that, you choose. There's no, I would say that I'm right and Billy's wrong, but I wouldn't, we both agreed that we can fight it out, and we enjoy seeing the people, the students taking part and seeing which side they take. It's about choosing, yeah, and about identifying, because it's harder and harder, I think, to work out where one's going. And the more opportunity you have to experiment and to investigate and to make choices, to me that's the most important thing you can do in college, because when you get out, you'll be kind of, the path won't necessarily be obvious, and you'll have to be making choices. So at least in college you're experimenting in a relatively safe environment. One of the things that I would like to see our heritage developing is a much greater degree of information as we go out into the next phase of our lives or into another country or whatever. We have some really strong sense of where we come from and where we belong in the world.
This program was produced by Wired FM and was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland's Sound and Vision funding scheme. Wired FM would like to thank everybody involved in making the series.